Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th day of May, Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Google is going all in on AI, and it wants you to know it. During the company's keynote at its I.O. developer conference on Tuesday, Google mentioned AI more than 120 times. But not all of Google's AI announcements were significant per se. Some were incremental, more evolutionary than revolutionary. Google plans to use generative AI to organize entire Google search results pages. What will AI-organized pages look like? Well, it depends on the search query. But they might show AI-generated summaries of reviews, discussions from social media sites like Reddit, and AI-generated lists of suggestions, Google said. Google is improving its AI-powered chatbot Gemini so that it can better understand the world around it. The company previewed a new experience in Gemini called Gemini Live, which will let users have in-depth voice chats with Gemini on their smartphones. Google's gunning for OpenAI's Sora with Veo. An AI model that can create 1080p video clips around a minute long when given a text prompt. Veo can capture different visual and cinematic styles, including shots of landscapes and time lapses, and make edits and adjustments to already generated footage. Ask Photos, which will roll out later this summer, will allow users to search across their Google Photos collection using natural language queries that leverage Gemini's understanding of their photos' content and other metadata. Gmail users will soon be able to search, summarize, and draft emails courtesy of Gemini, as well as take action on emails for more complex tasks, like helping process returns. Google previewed an AI-powered feature that alerts users to potential scams during a call. The capability, which will be built into future versions of Android, uses Gemini Nano, the smallest version of Google's generative AI offering, which can be run entirely on device. To listen for conversation patterns commonly associated with scams in real time. Google is enhancing its TalkBack accessibility feature for Android with a bit of generative AI magic. Soon, TalkBack will tap Gemini Nano to create oral descriptions of objects for low vision and blind users. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is ready for AI in everything? Your choices are can't wait, could be pretty helpful, we'll see, over my dead body, and a who now? So far, we have 26 votes, and a who now is just ahead of we'll see in the polls. And you can vote in the polls by heading on over to soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y. And you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
Didn't the same thing happen last year at Google I.O. where they said AI 100 and some times and Somebody clipped it all together?
Yeah. This time they did it themselves. At the end, Sundar Pichai came out and said, in case you're wondering How many times we said AI, up comes the number 120. And he said, we'll probably say AI again, and it went to 121 before this is over. Yeah. It was very funny. Look, AI is the current buzzword, the new hotness. I don't know how useful it's going to be to the average person on the average day, but it is certainly going to be everywhere.
At Apple's iPad announcement a couple of weeks ago, last week already? It's only a week ago?
Only a week.
We started getting the new models in, which is nice.
Nice.
Tim Cook was almost painfully trying to point out that we have AI too.
Right.
They've been calling it machine learning for a long time, but now they've jumped on the AI bandwagon.
Right.
But I saw a cute cartoon that two guys are talking, and a manager leans into the cubicle and says, "Hey, can you go through our slide deck and replace all the blockchain with AI?"
Yeah.
New buzzword.
That's about right. That is about right. There are going to be some useful things. The demo that I think the average everyday person would most appreciate is somebody came up and said, "Okay, I've got to return this thing." And the AI comes back and says, "Okay, I've searched through your emails and I found where you bought it. So I'll add the receipt to this, and I've sent it to them." Oh, they've replied and said, "Yes, you can do it. Here's the return label. I'll print that for you. And you need to take it to this address and drop it off." Boom, done. So it's very much like having a personal assistant to do those things for you.
And that's what we want our AI to do.
Right.
So somebody said, I don't want my AI to write a book for me. I want my AI to do the laundry.
So I can write a book.
So I can write a book.
Exactly right. That is exactly correct.
Yep.
And that's some of the stuff that this AI will do. Look, I get it. I'm glad I'm not teaching anymore. Because let's face it, a lot of students are going to be using AI to write papers for them. That's dangerous.
Plagiaristic.
Well, it's not just plagiarism. AI gets it wrong. Excuse me. Has hallucinations, they're calling it. I did a bunch of stuff with Google's Gemini, which they're going to start charging for now, I think. It's at AI tests.
.com, maybe?
No, asknick.com/AI tests. And there's a bunch of stuff that's there. The very last one, I basically asked it to write a biography for Nick Francesco of Rochester, New York. Almost nothing. I was lieutenant governor of New York. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently I was. I was also secretary of state.
What state of mind, though?
I became active in politics and public service. I've led a hell of a life. I apparently went to Monroe High School, which I didn't. I apparently graduated in 1956 when I was 5 years old.
Might have you confused with perhaps somebody else.
How many Nick Francescos of Rochester, New York are there?
Evidently at least one other.
At least one.
At least one. That's all it takes is one to, you know.
No, there is no other Nick Francesco
was having
in Rochester, New York.
That you're aware of.
That I've looked. I did a search just thinking maybe they got the wrong Nick Francesco of Rochester, New York. Nope. The only one that comes up is me. Now, if you just search Nick Francesco, you also get the DJ. DJ Nick Francesco.
Okay.
And a couple of other people and, a lot of other stuff. But
what if you spell your name wrong?
I didn't.
Right. But what if you do? Maybe you find someone else like that.
Maybe you do. Anyway, the point is there's a whole bunch of them in there. I also had to, when I first set it up, there's a parameter that says, give me not X-rated stuff, but you don't block anything. Because the first query I gave it was, tell me about the Norse god Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And it came back and said, I can't do that because it's blocked by a naughty filter. What? I mean, okay, there's some stuff in the original legends. And I get that.
What's up, scene?
But at one point.
He liked the party.
He liked to party.
One of his powers was his beer would automatically refill itself.
That's the movie. We're talking about the actual Norse god. And there was, for example, he accidentally married Loki at one point. As a prank, Loki dressed himself as his bride. And they went through the marriage ceremony. You know, and he had a veil on and everything. But, you know, I don't know that would... That would hit the filter. Anyway, the point is, it was just weird. And about half the time, AI gets it wrong. Like I said, it's they call it hallucinating, which is just another word for lying.
So I asked Gemini Now to tell me about you, and I said, I don't have enough information about that person.
Oh, interesting. but yeah, so at any rate, the idea is that this stuff is dangerous in every aspect. First, it's good at creating liars. We're seeing scammers using AI now. And
sometimes leaving the AI prompts in it. As a large language model, the answer is, you know.
Right, exactly. And we're seeing it, you know, pictures being created that are obviously fake. I did a talk for the Delta Sigma Theta sorority, and Delta Sigma Theta, yeah. Doctor Who is Theta Sigma, so they were the Sigma Theta sorority. And you can see, I mean, people with six fingers, people with three arms, those are the obvious ones, but there's a lot that aren't obvious that are pretty dang scarily good looking.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have natural language stuff where people can, I mean, it sounds like a real person. They laugh, they take breaths, all of that stuff. So it's a pretty tough thing to figure out when you're seeing AI. Now there are laws and agreements in place or that they're talking about to watermark everything. Right. So if you get a picture or an audio, there'd be a watermark in it that says this is fake. The average person won't see that watermark first. Mm-hmm. And secondly, only the people who obey the law will put those watermarks in. So, you know, mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll see where this takes us in the future. But one of the things that AI needs to be able to do is to warn you when you're viewing or listening to or reading something that was created by AI.
Well, that's what they were worried about with the upcoming election. Some of this fake ads and everything else that some of these folks can generate that you would swear up and down, just like when they, you know, fake you out on a bank website.
Right.
That you'd see these ads and you'd swear up and down that, no, that's real. That's what they said. And, oh, how could they? When they really didn't.
Right, right. It's, you know, it used to be you'd hire a voice actor.
Yeah, voiceover.
To do call, to make calls, you know, like a mimic and to do that. But now they just do it. I mean,
in a world where Vic LaFontaine.
Right, Vic LaFontaine or Rich Little or Mel Blanc, that ilk of person, Joe Alasky, any of those people could imitate the voices, right? Now they don't even need that. I mean, look, in Alexa, you can buy celebrity voices.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have Samuel L. Jackson or Melissa McCarthy or whoever tell you the weather and all of that stuff. It used to be back in the day when Susan Bennett was doing Siri that you sit in a booth all day and you say all the phrases, right? The time is,
mm-hmm.
The temperature is. And then you do all the phonemes, and they put them all together to make words. Now they don't need that.
Yep.
They take a sample of your voice and shoot it through AI, and AI pretends to be you.
It can create all those.
So they certainly don't have they have Samuel L. Jackson sitting in a booth all day going, shh.
So 20 years ago when Roger Ebert started losing his voice, it was a big deal that a company was able to put together all of his phonemes
right.
from all the talks and appearances he's done to build him an electronic voice that sounded like him. And then he did a tech talk about that.
Right.
And I had read someone had asked Stephen Hawking why he didn't have a natural sounding voice. And he basically said, I like the robot voice. That's me. Everyone knows that's me now.
Exactly right. Exactly right. But yeah, so... we're going to be seeing more and more of that. We're going to be hearing more and more of that. There apparently was a phone call going around of President Biden telling people not to vote. I don't care what your political bent is. No politician is going to tell you don't vote.
Yeah, really.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. But people fell for it.
Oh, of course.
Because you could talk to him. It wasn't a recorded voice saying, this is Joe Biden, don't vote. It was, hi, I'm Joe Biden. Who am I talking to? Oh, this is Nick. Hiya, Nick. Just wanted to tell you, you don't have to vote this time around. I've got the election in the bag, blah, blah, blah. Sounded like him.
I've always worried about that by seeing the early returns on TV. Oh, my guy's up 50 points. I don't have to bother going.
And then, well, that's why they don't give it anymore until after the polls at various areas close.
Yeah. Right.
Because of just that. That was back, I think, in the 70s.
Yeah.
That they were doing that. And like you said, people, oh, I don't have to go out and vote. It's nasty out.
I read a cute story about my wife is a someone who works.
Don't say it.
She works at the polls.
Okay.
Takes your name and gives you your ballot, things like that. Okay. And there were some stories. One time someone showed it up wearing a Vote Steve Rogers t-shirt. And they wouldn't let him into the polling place because he was
advertising.
Advertising for a candidate.
Right.
Even so, apparently someone doesn't know who Captain America is.
Right, exactly.
But and so someone said, yeah, if Steve Rogers was running, I'd probably vote for him.
You can do write-ins. So that's the other
people
side.
People write-in Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck.
Yeah, all the time. So, you know, and advertisement can't be, within so many feet of the election.
Right.
Or the polling site.
No, I get that. I do. We've seen people come to the polls with Trump, whatever, or Biden, whatever shirts, and we tell them put a jacket on.
You're pressing my free speech.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's illegal to do that in a polling place.
Right.
So it was always Stark, Rogers. So, Captain America, but I don't know if I'd want Tony Stark running.
Right, exactly. Rogers Wilson I'd go for. At any rate, that's we're seeing more and more AI, and it's going to be helpful. It's going to be useful. And later on I'll tell a story, but I had a number of stops to make yesterday, and what would have been really nice is to be able to say to my phone, I have to go here, 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 and here. Give me the most efficient route.
The traveling salesman
problem. Map out the route.
Exactly.
That's the first thing you learn in programming class.
Exactly.
After Hello World.
Right. So do that for me and show me, give me the Google Maps route.
Yeah, there is software out there for it.
Right.
But it costs thousands of dollars.
Well, it costs a lot of money. Or as Steve said, you spend a lot of time writing the code yourself.
Yeah.
In this case, it would have been really nice to just be able to say, here's where I get. Take a look at my schedule. Take a look at my calendar. And tell me the most efficient route to do all these stops.
Yep.
Lovely. I can't argue with that. That's a good use of AI.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that. I want more leisure time to do the things I want to do.
And then
I will write my own books, thank you. I will draw my own pictures, thank you. I will make my own music, thank you. And I want you to do the laundry.
And you drive the car while I'm going to this place.
Well, that's...
I want to jump over the next 10 years where no one trusts self-driving cars, they don't work well, and get to the point we see in all the sci-fi movies where it works perfectly. Until the robots come to kill you.
Exactly. That's the next thing. All right. To the phones. Our first call is Brian from Greece, New York. Hi, Brian. What's up?
Oh, not much, gentlemen. I remember this from long, long ago. You're telling stories about AI and identification, chopping the sentences up to make a new story. I think it was Johnny Carson. It might have been Jack Parr. That's how old this story is. They did a bit where they had somebody, like a Secretary of State, giving a news bit that he read off, and it was about visiting foreign governments in Europe or something like that. And I said, well, that's what the guy really said. And now listen to this. And they reordered the thing. They just hard cut and recut a thing. And the last thing they said, the interviewer says, and what do you want the United States to do for you? I want them to send me abroad. Yeah. And that was it. So this AI thing isn't all that new.
Right, right. You're right. It used to be, but you had to be good at splicing audio tape.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You had to time it down and all like that.
Right. You had to have a certain amount of skill and talent. Now all you need to be able to do is write a prompt, although that's at this point not so easy yet.
Still need
yet.
Some talent, right? Yeah, you need to stop watching a grease pen here.
Right. Exactly. You're right. I mean, that's been going on for a long time. The big thing is, you know, you see it on the late shows now where they cut up video. And you can tell it's fake because of the jumps. The jumps in camera shots. But now they could do that all in AI and make it look completely natural.
Yeah.
It used to be something called the Uncanny Valley. Yep. And it was the space between that looks pretty good and that looks real. You never could make that jump.
So why is there an evolutionary need for an uncanny valley that we developed it? Was something that looked human but wasn't that we generated this thing?
nice point.
Yeah.
But the point is we had this uncanny valley and we don't anymore. We've not only jumped it, we've filled it in and covered it over with concrete and made it a parking lot. So we've paved paradise and made it a parking lot. But yeah, so it seems to me that we're entering, it'll eventually work its way out, as did every other technological innovation that heralded the end of the world. But it's going to be a while. We're in the chaos days before it settles out, and that's a tough place for us to be.
Well, have a good time, gentlemen.
Well, thank you, sir. Have fun.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's, what was it? One of the Final Fantasies, the movies that came out.
Yeah.
They said, this is so realistic, but it doesn't jump the Uncanny Valley. And you look at it, and it was really good, but you knew it wasn't real.
Yep.
Now it's hard to tell.
I get a kick out of the bloopers at the end of some animated movies.
Where they fake a blooper,
yeah.
Yeah, but there's just no point at which this is going to stop. I'm sorry, it's just going to get more and more and more. And like I said, right now we're in the chaos era of that. It's all brand new. We don't know what to do. There's no way to deal with it. The tools aren't there for us as average human beings to manage and understand it. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I hate to say it, but we have to be cynics. You know, we have to be willing to say, yeah, that's bullpucky. I'm not believing that.
I read a story once where copyright infringement and people recording everyone willy-nilly was so common that people would wear jammers. Everyone wore a jammer.
Yep.
And the story was about someone who created a jammer that could block anything and made a fortune with it.
Yeah, I bet. All right. We are done with this segment, but we're only a quarter of a way through the show, so don't get excited. There's a whole lot more sound bites coming your way. More Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more Nick Francesco, and more of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, I'm having cable management issues today. I apologize. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. But I'll try and keep it as short as I can because I know you only got 2 hours, right?
Right.
Well, let's start. The nonprofit that I work with, I'm sort of the tech guy, and I'm looking at other people getting involved in certain things. And computers get old and worn out, so Linux looks good, except I don't want to have to support Linux in any big way. So I came to the conclusion that probably the easiest Linux for a newbie that would be worth, you know, throwing out there would be Ubuntu.
It depends.
Okay.
There are several versions of Linux that are designed specifically for the Windows user. PC, yep. Linux OS, Pop OS. I'm sure that I'm going to get all kinds of angry calls and letters about
missing
them all. Your own. But there are a number that purport to be closer to Windows, so you have less to learn in terms of where things are.
Yeah, yeah. I did a bunch of those, you know, looking around on those, and one of the criteria has to do with accounting for this nonprofit is that Money Dance is coming into the picture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm going to use that kind of in a multi-user environment, so we can distribute the different roles that are involved in the accounting or whatever.
Which you can do, because if Money Dance, you know, goes not only to Linux platform but Mac and PC and Android.
Right, right. You know, QuickBooks is no longer going to be sold as the standalone. You'll only be able to sign up
online,
for the online stuff.
Online only. The desktop, desktop version is going away.
Yep.
So Money Dance can run on any platform.
Right.
So the other part of that is that it's obviously some file somewhere is going to have to be in the cloud.
Right. And you can do that with Money Dance. It has no problem with it.
Right. Well, either Google or Dropbox would work. Mm-hmm. Now, the trick is, I was looking at there's not like a Google desktop for Linux. But if there's something that would work that's not too complicated, then I can continue to go down this road.
Well, in terms of Google Desktop, not really.
As long as it works.
Right.
And it's not too complicated to do.
Right. Boy, that's a good question. There's no, you can mount a Google Drive share.
There's a client called InSync that syncs with multiple cloud services.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be no money, too.
Right.
They're little, tiny amount of money. Yeah, we're broke.
I'm going to have to think about this one, the best way to do that.
Yeah. Not a rush. I've been researching it for several weeks and lots of twists and turns and roadblocks, but okay.
GNOME does it for free.
Who does?
GNOME.
Right.
So a different variant of Linux has a built-in Google Drive integration.
Now there is a built-in sync for Money Dance.
I believe that worked because that requires the Google Drive or the Dropbox, from what I've read so far. I could be wrong on that because it's got to sync to something, but it's got to be something outside your own box.
Right, but I think it's.
They have their own syncing.
They have their own
service.
Syncing software,
Let
and
me
you
find
just
that next.
You create a new account set. It's called. Take a look at account sets. And I think what happens is you have just multiple computers talking to each other. But I don't know if that works over the internet or only on an intranet inside a company.
I think that's just internal. From what I wasn't looking closely at that, but I think that's.
Right. Anyway, I'll look into this, but I don't have an answer for you right now.
That's no problem. All right. Thank you for your time.
All right. Have fun.
Almost.
Exactly. Yeah, Money Dance does do syncing, but I don't. Oh yeah, you can share.
Somebody's your name.
Yeah, but who do they do? You can use any shared folder such as Dropbox.
Right.
So you need to have.
So you need a Dropbox or iCloud or something.
Right. And so how do you mount that in your Linux client?
Well, I don't know that you need to. I don't know that it doesn't happen automatically, but I haven't done enough research yet. If anybody out there knows.
Yeah, because I've only played with the Money Dance on one computer.
Oh, right.
So that's the only place I need it.
Right.
But I know, yeah, I do have it up on my Google Drive.
The the instructions I found at Infinite Kind, the publishers of Money Dance, they're showing an example of Dropbox, and it says it syncs directly to the Dropbox servers or through a folder on your computer.
So you don't need a folder on your computer if it syncs directly to Dropbox.
Right, and there are other services it syncs with as well.
So that may be the answer. Get a Dropbox or an iCloud or a...
Yeah.
Google Drive or OneDrive or whatever it is you want, and then just tell everybody that's where the file is, go.
And I mean, for Google Drive, since you get the 15 gig free anyways, you know, most likely your file isn't going to be any, you know, that big.
Right. The biggest online drive size is at Google Drive with 15 gigs, so that should be more than enough for... Yeah. Whatever you do, I can't imagine an organization big enough to.
And then, I mean, at the end of each year, you'd want to archive it anyways.
Right.
And start the new fiscal year fresh.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
I'm doing good. And you?
Good.
Hey, I got some information. I've been listening to the previous caller, and I've been doing a lot of, spending a lot of time tinkering with Linux. I started with Ubuntu and the latest version, 24.04, and it's easy to use. Adding some stuff, it's a learning curve. But if once you set up one, you can set up 50 of them, just simpler.
Right.
I have Money Dance on my desktop, which is a Windows. I have it on two laptops, which are Linux. I have it on my phone, Android.
Mm-hmm.
And using the Dropbox, Dropbox is free for the lowest version, which is all you need.
Yeah.
But the other thing, if he wants people to have access to Google Drive, he could create a Google account that is a general account that everybody can access that you want to access.
Right.
And when you have a Chrome browser and you log in, there's a little 9-dot thing in the upper right-hand corner that you can open any of the Google services.
Right.
I can open my email. I can open my Drive. I can open my Keep Notes. All of that from that same browser window, which makes it super simple that you don't have to know anything. I certainly don't. To be able to access all that stuff, you just got to click on a thing and pick one.
Yep.
But that is extremely simple. So to my question that I originally called for was I'm looking for a video recorder that I can record from any kind of camera to be able to do some minor editing, nothing super major, but working in front of a green screen with some sort of background. Some of the video recording capabilities that I've seen don't have I didn't find a setting for backgrounds. So, like, if I were doing a Zoom call and I didn't want to have my background be shown to everybody that I'm in the Zoom thing with, I can use a background. But I don't see that for just like making a video recording that I want to keep and maybe share with minimal amount of people.
There's one. Are you talking about Linux or Windows or what? Well, doesn't matter.
Linux.
There's
Linux.
A program called OpenShot.
OpenShot?
OpenShot. There's also a thing called Lightworks, although I don't know much about it. But OpenShot is a video editor. You can do 3D effects. You can do green screen. You can do all kinds of things.
Okay.
So take a look at that. And it's a cross-platform editor. Works on Linux, Mac, Windows, FreeBSD.
That might already be on my Linux machine. I just have to search for it.
Could be.
There's a whole bunch of stuff when you install a Linux 2404. There's a whole bunch of stuff. I don't even know how to use most of it yet, but I'm working at it.
OpenShot does exist in the repositories for Linux, so you can install it.
Okay.
It doesn't. So I don't believe it's installed by default, but it's there and you can install it.
I'm still trying to find how I can make the fingerprint reader work, and I can't even find anything that tells me that there is a fingerprint reader on this laptop.
Yeah, fingerprints are tough, mainly because most of that software is proprietary, and a lot of it, the easiest way for them to create the drivers is to use a bunch of the Windows underlying code. So that's tougher.
So that may not be. Yeah, it's not the end of the world. It may not be a usable thing on the Linux.
It depends on a whole lot of stuff. There is something called fprintd, which lets you do that. I don't know much about it. It's the word print with an F in front of it and a D after it. Fprintd, fingerprint okay. daemon. And that will help. You still need an app to use it, but it's where you would start. So search through your repositories for a fingerprint reader. The other thing is it's probably going to be a different set of drivers for whatever
device you're using.
Right, whatever hardware is installed in that particular computer. So
I looked for Dell products. I thought I found one, I installed it, and all of a sudden everything started going haywire. I started getting, it wouldn't read the download folder, said I misspelled it. It was a bunch of stuff that just went crazy. So I don't know what that was, but my simple solution was to plug the stick in and start all over again. So... I'm two rounds on one desktop, I mean one laptop, and one round on the other. But the more you do it, the easier it gets.
right. That's exactly right. Like I said, there's fingerprint reader support, but finding an app for your particular version of hardware,
right,
is the hard part.
If I can't use it, it's not the end of the world. It just would be a convenience. I have a KDE system settings app that's on the laptop. It's part of the Ubuntu install, and it shows me devices, but I don't even see a fingerprint reader in that using that app. I don't know if there's other apps that will show devices. So
it's usually connected to the USB bus.
Yeah, usually.
Okay. Well, I can search that, but I didn't know
mine,
if there was
mine doesn't show on USB either.
It may not be activated.
Okay.
Take a look in your BIOS and see if it's simply not turned on.
Okay.
Or maybe it's not going to show up until you've got the right driver. I don't know. The big thing is it may not call itself a fingerprint reader. It may just be a device from X Corporation, right? And you have to know what X is.
Right.
You may find that. One of them, you said this was a Dell?
Yes.
One of the nice things about Dell is you can go to their website support in the support section and type in the serial number of your computer. It will tell you an astounding amount of information.
Oh, operating system, yeah. Chips, and everything else.
Yeah, I had the name and name and the model, but I didn't put in the serial number.
Yeah,
the service tag.
Yeah, it's a service tag on the back, and usually it starts with a few letters, then his numbers, and letters again. And you can go right to the Dell site, enter the service tag, and it looks up your machine, tells you what operating system you had, all the drivers that were installed for it, and everything else.
Okay, I can do that. So the one other question is deleting apps. I have installed a few that are duplicates, and I'm trying to sort through which ones I like better.
Yep.
And then get rid of the others, but I don't see a way to delete it. I right-click on it, and it asks me to pin it or...
Okay, so you have something called software, an installer, a software installer program?
I'm using the Gedit. I mean the Gdeb.
Right. Okay, but there's also I forget what it's exactly it's called. It's a software something. Hold on. It's just called something along that line. And okay. What you can do is run that, and what it will do is show you all of the installed packages. It shows your whole catalog. And then you can click on something and say, I don't want this anymore. There's an uninstall. If it's not installed, so you can, I'm looking at mine right now, and it says that, you know, there's an installed tab. So I can go to the installed tab, and it shows me all the software that's installed, and there's an uninstall button.
Oh, okay.
And that's the easiest way to do it. You can also do it through apt, which would be sudo apt purge and the name of the program from the command line, and will purge that program.
You mean the purge is real?
The purge is real.
No.
You can uninstall it, but that doesn't get rid of a lot of the ancillary files. Purge gets rid of everything associated with that particular program, assuming it's not being used by another program.
Okay. Well, that was my next question. Is it gonna take out something that's
generally speaking? I've never personally seen that happen.
Okay. I looked, and you haven't written a book yet on Linux Ubuntu.
No, I have not. There are plenty of them. I have not written one, and that's true.
Do you have anybody that you recommend? Any authors? Any?
I haven't looked at a Linux book in years. I'm sorry.
And there's so many YouTube videos that if you have, say,
print is so old school from you print authors.
Yeah,
right.
You know, questions on say unpacking or you know doing this or doing that. You can go to YouTube. And 10-to-1 odds, find somebody that's already done a video on that, and it'll walk you right through it. Yeah, and there are a number of gentlemen on the YouTube network that do weekly updates on different trips and tips and tricks and all this other stuff.
There's also different sides to it. If you're a user or an administrator or a developer.
Yeah.
Right. Two things you should check out. You should say how to use apt, APT,
okay,
for Linux, and how to use snap for Linux.
Yeah.
Those are the two you should look up on YouTube.
Okay, I've installed a few things with the DEB extension.
Right.
And that seems to be... That seems to be the easiest for me anyway so far.
That's fair. And the third thing then that you should look up is how to use Gdebi, G-D-E-B-I, the GNOME Debian installer, Gdebi. So those are really the three sets of things you should look up. And just look, I'm sending you down a rabbit hole here, Fred.
Yeah.
But that's the... That's the fun of Linux, though. You know, if you mess it up, oh, well, you know, you can always start again. But you've learned a lot.
There's an O'Reilly book on the command line with, is that a hawk on the cover?
Yeah, how old is that book? I mean, Snap wasn't around when we started writing these books.
But there is so much free information out there. Like I say, you could literally spend the next probably, I'm guessing, couple of years just sitting in front of the the monitor watching all the different videos and flavors of Linux on there.
Well, I pretty much installed the things, but the command line scares me a bit because I'm afraid of having to reinstall everything that I've already done. So I'm trying to keep one machine working and then use the other one for just
playing around.
Yeah, that I can. If I screw it up, I can reinstall.
Yeah,
that's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it, you know. And it's like, oh well. So I learned that I won't do it on this machine that I've got working. Right. But how you're going to get a good handle on the different things that you want to do. You sound like the type of person that has no problem playing around, experimenting. If it goes awry, oh well, I learned something from that and try something different.
Yep. I learn best by doing hands-on. I'm not
as do a lot of people.
Yep.
A lot of people. You can sit there, stare at a screen for hours, come away and go, okay, do you know this? Huh?
Yeah.
Whereas if you actually do hands-on, oh, yeah, we did here, we go there, do this, do that.
That's one of the things I do, too, Fred. If I'm watching a YouTube video or whatever, I pause it and try it on the laptop and then go back to the desktop and
watch the next section. Best way to do it, yeah.
Try it on the laptop.
Yeah.
RF.
Well, that's the other thing, too, about watching it on the YouTube channels. You can pause.
Yeah.
You know, stop it. Go ahead and try it on there and then wait for him to, you know, go on to the next step.
Rewind and see, what did he say?
Yeah.
Right.
And take notes. Take your own notes that are meaningful to you. That, you know, oh, yeah, there's a lot here so you can remember other key points down the road.
Yeah, good advice. I'm making notes as you're speaking. So
that's the best way to learn sometimes. You know, like there's no standard way for anybody to learn something. It's going to be different from every person that you meet.
That's true. Wow. Okay, so I got a lot to work on still.
This is what keeps you young, Fred.
But the key thing, Fred, have fun at it.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm trying not to get too frustrated.
There you go, my friend.
And hopefully your other caller can get something out of that.
Yep. Thanks, Fred.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is now history. But it's a living history because we have another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Another hour of Dave Enright, another hour of Steve Ray, another hour of Nick Francesco, and another hour of you. And you can join in the fun by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 800-790-0415. And maybe when we come back, I'll tell my story. It's not quite an Uncle Dave story, but it's a pretty good story, and we'll do that maybe when we come back. In the meantime, take a quick bio break, get yourself something to eat and drink, and enjoy us. It's important to stay hydrated, and we'll be back with Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter @901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
But hold on. This...
Found it.
Now, it's only fair that it's for so many years, it was always Wake Up Dave. I get to turn around and go, Wake Up Nick! You awake yet?
I am.
All right.
All right, kiddies, gather around. Get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair as we desperately try to slap awake Uncle Nick to tell his little story. All right, so here's the thing. First, two things, actually. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. First
actually, they
is,
did.
They did expect
they, yeah, they might have.
Ahead of them.
After all these years, they might have.
Yeah, they might have. The first one was I bought a laptop through Woot, and it came to me, and I thought, this is great. I'm going to put Linux. It was an open box sale.
So was this the most recent one?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was super, super cheap, and nice little laptop. I mean, very nice, from a company called MSI, who basically makes the motherboard that almost everybody else uses.
Yeah.
Them and Asus and a couple of others. But anyway, the point is I bought this laptop and came and it was great. I was going to put Linux on it. And I could not get into the BIOS. It had a BIOS password set. So an open box sale. They'd gotten it, obviously, from a company that went out of business. And I get it. I get it. It was in beautiful shape. But it had this BIOS password. They don't know the BIOS password. And I thought, I can screw around with it. Open it up, try to short out the BIOS, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. I just returned it. So I said, you know, the BIOS is stuck. What can we do? I sent them an email. I thought, well, this is going to take a week before I hear from anybody. Next morning.
Huh?
Well, you have three choices. You can return it. You can keep it and screw around with it yourself. Or you can try to find an MSI service center in your area. I said, option one, please. I'll just return it. They said, okay, we will send you a label.
I clearly
still have the box because it was yesterday.
Yeah, really?
I got it. Stick the label on the box. Off it goes. I said, okay, that's what we're going to do. That was Tuesday or Wednesday. And I got the label. I printed it out. I stuck it on. So I was all ready to bring it back on Friday. Thursday night, we have a power outage. Just a second or two.
Mm-hmm.
Everything comes back up. It rebooted a couple of my Raspberry Pis, and we had to reset the clock on the microwave. And
that one analog clock, no.
Yeah, right. Well, actually, we have two. So big deal. Unfortunately, it also took out my ONT, the green light router, green light modem. Dead.
Uh-huh.
Just dead. The little red power light was going, meep.
Yeah.
And so nothing else was lit, nothing.
So you got a good power surge then.
Yeah, I called Greenlight. Well, this ONT is 9 years old. I got it in 2015. That's when Greenlight came into my neighborhood. Trust me.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I
explicit.
So I immediately called Greenlight, and then the lady who answered, it was late. I mean, this is well after hours Thursday night. So I called up, and the lady said, "Okay, I see what you know." She walked me through it. What's the power light doing? What's the PON light doing? What's the data light doing? Nothing. Feeble little red blinking light on power. She said, well, it's pretty dead, clearly dead. She said, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for you tonight. She was disappointing but fair that, you know, it was Thursday night.
Yep.
She said, I can't get anybody out to your house until Friday afternoon. which was also a little disappointing, but fair. It's next day service. It just wasn't, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. She said, or if you want to do the swap yourself, you can come and pick one up at 9. Oh, option two. Please, we'll take option two. No question. So I went and brought the old one back and gave it to her and got a nice new one. It's from Nokia. This is a very different model. It's very nice. Went home, plugged in the PON, plugged in the Ethernet, plugged in the power. Took a couple of minutes to sync up.
Yep, takes.
And I restarted my router, my personal wireless router, so that it would find the new signal.
Yeah, because from Greenlight, folks, just so you know, you only get their little, what would you?
Well, it's an ONT, an optical network terminal, although it's basically the modem.
Yeah, and you got to hook it up to your own router.
Right. And so I did all that, and I was up and running like 15 minutes after I got home, which was great because it meant I could sleep, you know, Friday night I could sleep with both eyes closed. And I just want to send kudos first to Woot for the quick turnaround of everything there and how they gave me no problems at all. But more importantly to Greenlight, who just, I mean, think about it. It was 12, 14 hours between it died and I got a new one.
So that was on the 9th?
What's today?
Today's the 18th.
No, it was on the 16th. It was this Thursday.
Oh, it was this Thursday? I thought it was, you said it was last week.
No, it was this past Thursday, the one we just had, the 16th.
Okay.
So it was, you know, what, 10, 12 hours? Before,
gotcha.
Between I don't have, the worst part was I thought, you know what, I'm a tech guy.
Yeah.
Really?
I will create a hotspot.
Yeah.
I can do this. I can create a hotspot. So I did. I set up my phone and created a hotspot and connected. And instead of 500 megabits, which I was getting with Greenlight, I was getting 9 megabits. Now, look, I come from the old days.
Is that 2G?
That's, oh my gosh, is what it is. I come from the old days. When I had 150 baud modem, 150 bits per second, 15 characters per second. Okay, I'm from the days when we had to sacrifice a robot to get online. Their dying screams haunt me to this day. But we were only pushing text through the line, so 150 baud was not bad. And then, of course, 300 baud, 1200 baud. I'm from the era when I got a 2400 baud modem. It made me angry because now it was running so fast, I had to rewrite the terminal program I'd written because I couldn't read the screen fast enough. I had to now save it into a buffer and read it later.
Slow it down to read it.
Right. So I went through all of that. So I'm used to slow internet, I thought. But, you know, I will admit that I would much rather have 500 megabit than 9 megabit, particularly since nowadays, you know, you're doing things like surfing the web and doing Facebook and stuff that assumes you've got a fast connection.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know, if I were still on Archie, I would be fine. You know, a text-based search engine. Okay,
yeah.
I get that. But this was very different. So it was... there was a point where I thought, I'm done now. I'm going to have to break out the mandolin and learn to be a wandering minstrel.
How am I going to
learn to churn butter without the internet? I don't know.
Yeah, really.
But it's all fixed now. I'm back in the 21st century, and I want to kudos to Greenlight for getting me there fast.
It's always difficult when I go to a customer that still has DSL.
Yep.
You know, 5 if I'm lucky. And they need to download a 10 gig system file.
Yep.
Be there
yep.
all day. So you know this other company gives you 300, and this other company gives you 500 minimums.
Right.
And they both offer faster than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm fine. You know, we don't download that much. Oh, okay.
Okay. And you're right.
Yeah.
If all you do is email.
Yeah.
And some very, very, very light surfing.
Basic, yeah.
9 megabits will be
you're
fine.
You're not on it, 4 or 5 hours at a whack, maybe 10, half hour.
Start going into TV streaming or streaming movies.
Right. I certainly couldn't watch anything that night. And I certainly couldn't do YouTube that night. And I, you know, there was none of that. But, you know, it, and in emergency, I could have gotten something done. So that was, you know, that was the big thing.
There is
and
a fallback.
You know, it was a cellular network, and I get it. That's not as fast as other things, but still.
It's still internet.
It's still internet, and so that was that. But I had two really, really good customer service
that's unusual.
Experiences
that's
this
unusual.
Week, last this past week, and it was very nice. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry, what's up?
So, first thing I'm going to say is open the pod bay door, Hal.
I can't do that, Dave.
Well, the whole conversation about AI, I think that's what always registers with me.
Right.
Is that one. But, no, I was just going to tell you guys about a really nasty phishing attack that I just got.
Ooh.
I'm in a group where I receive emails on a fairly regular basis from the person who runs it. And so I get this email that looks like it's from the group, and it says, you're invited to a special party. Beautiful graphics. I got this thing that looks like a wedding invitation kind of a thing on the front of it, and it says, click here. So, like an idiot, I click on it, and it opens up, and it says to open your invitation, and then it shows. In beautiful graphics, it shows four or five different email systems like Yahoo and Google and all the major ones. It says, "Click here and then enter your password." And like an idiot, I got 3/4 of the way through my password, and I go, "Gee, is it this one or that one?" And I stopped. And I went to get my little password cheat sheet, and I came back, and I go, wait a minute, this is dumb. I did text the person who sends out the emails most of the time, and I said, did you send out an email about a special party? And he goes, absolutely no. So we've warned everybody about, you know, don't open any more emails from the group. But the thing that got me was the graphics were absolutely beautiful, you know.
Yep.
And it also had a big Acrobat logo up in the top corner.
Yep.
So it looked real legit, and I'm like,
probably
man.
A template from Adobe.
Yeah, they can take the time and effort that you would, if you were in the court of law, you would swear up and down on a stack of Bibles that it was legit.
Right, and that's why we say you can't just not trust messages from people you don't know, because from people you know, you can get fake stuff too.
They can get hacked.
Yeah. Using their email address. Didn't come from them, just using their email address.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I still don't, I guess I don't understand about this thing, because would that show up in the person's sent box?
No.
Not unless they are infected and they did send it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sending a postal letter. I can put anybody's return address on that letter I want. And email addresses are basically public knowledge. You can collect billions of them easily enough. And so I can send a junk mail letter in your name, your return address, and you never see it. But if it bounces, post office delivers it anyway, but with electronic mail, it can bounce if it can't be delivered. You would start getting all the bounce messages. So I can't deliver this message, can't deliver this message. So that's a clue that your email was used in sending a scam.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's, you can put anyone's return address you want on an email.
All right. Well, anyway, but I just thought you guys would be good for you to hear about this and
appreciate it.
Yeah, interesting.
It is. It's amazing what lengths people will go to be nasty.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, there is no limit.
They're hoping to get people who aren't paying attention and type in their passwords. Now they have access to your Gmail or whichever, you know, system you use. And the likelihood so many people reuse passwords once they have your Gmail password. They've probably got your phone password. They've probably got your banking password.
Or they can do a forgot password at every bank and
till
it just sends them a reset.
Oh, that's yeah, and yeah, I go along with that, and that's the problem with only having a 512K memory in your head, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, all right, well, great. I enjoy listening to the program, guys, and I really appreciate you putting out the good information out there.
Thank you, Larry. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
It's especially hard when we had a customer that did 75% of the right thing. So there, one of the ISPs in town is switching their back-end email provider, I suppose. So if you have a Frontier email address, you must change your email program to use the Yahoo mail servers.
You can still keep the same address.
Right. But
it's at Yahoo now.
It's at Yahoo now. And it's been that way for a few years, but Frontier server addresses still worked. Frontier shut that down last month. So they sent another batch of emails out to all of their customers saying you don't have to change your email address, but you have to change your server address in your mail program, or you go to yahoo.com to read your mail now instead of frontier.com.
Right.
And so one of our customers got this email. They called Frontier, asked them if this was really true, and Frontier says, yep, that's true. So they click on the link in the fake email about the real topic.
Ouch.
And it starts asking for their passwords. It's, well, Frontier said it was real, so they typed in their password.
Yeah.
So the bad guys, so Frontier isn't that big of an ISP.
Right.
But some bad guy, maybe in Rochester.
Could be. You never know where.
Found out this was happening and sent out fake email about a real topic with a fake return response to try to trick more people who are expecting this thing to happen. And it's just frustrating that they did all the right things. They got a suspicious email. They called who it was supposedly from and was told that, yes, this is a real thing happening. But just the next step was, did it really come from the person that said it came from?
Right. Nope. And that's one of the problems with email. It was never set up to be secure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do things like DKIM and all that stuff to say, yes, this sender is legitimate. But I can set up my own server to be a legitimate server.
Yep.
That doesn't tell you that the emails that are coming from it aren't fake. It's a legitimate server, not a legitimate email.
Yep.
And again, theoretically, over time, that's one of the things that AI will help you with. Theoretically. And the way you tell is really you have to dig into the headers and see where it all
actually
came from.
Do your homework. Yep.
And that's a pain in the patoot.
You
and
have to understand what they're supposed to be to know when they're wrong.
Right. And again, that's something that AI should be doing for us.
Mm-hmm.
AI should be the one that every time you get an email, it goes through the email and says, what's the chain? Oh, look, it came from, you know,
some dark website.
In Russia.
Yeah.
No, thank you. This is illegitimate.
Yep. Speaking of good stories, I actually got to celebrate with my wife just last night as she sat there. You'd have to picture this, folks, but my wife had this one tablet and a few pages and then all these little post-it notes all over it with passwords on it.
Yep.
Some of them were 2 and 3 generations old. Well, I created a monster in a good way, and that I got her onto Enpass. She has been using due diligence over the past week and a half, and last night she was finally, here I go. She was taking all those little post-it notes and other thing else going through the shredder, because now she officially has all her passwords into Enpass. But she just didn't type the ones that were on that little thing. She went into the website because I showed her how to do it. And she says, I want to change my password. So she went over then to Enpass and had Enpass create some really complicated passwords. And I showed her how to go back. Now paste it in there, save it. So now every one of her websites has if it's either excellent or better.
Right.
On every little site that she does, and now she, if she's going to some obscure site, I told her, put it down. Write it down and put it in there. You may never go back to it again, but if you do, you've got it. And you don't have to keep these little snippets of paper. So she is now fully converted to NBIS.
Nice.
I tell you, when I set up the laptop, trying to get into it, I set it up. I went into Windows. It was a brand new machine, so it made me install.
Yeah, you got to go through that.
And I went into NPass and wrote all that stuff down too. I knew I wasn't going to keep the machine, but make it a habit, and you don't break the habit.
It just saves so much frustration because she was getting so frustrated with herself. She go, "Well, I can't remember which. Do you know which one?" No, you know, because she'd have so many little snippets.
I know so many people who have a notebook where they keep their passwords. That's nice. But A, you have to keep it up to date.
Mm-hmm.
B, cross out the old passwords.
Mm-hmm. If you try it and you
change them.
Or when you try it and it doesn't work, cross it off.
Cross it off.
And then we'll go try the next one, then the next one, then the next one.
And for those of you who like to save old passwords, NPass has a note field. You can copy the old password down into the note field and put in the new password. So your old password is still there. You have it to look at.
Just
in
case.
Go back and remember it. Go strolling down memory lane with your old passwords. But the new passwords are the ones that are in use.
We had that happen this week with a customer where they're trying to log into a service and it kept saying wrong, wrong, wrong. And so then, all right, let's reset the password. Your password must be different than the last one you used.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying all this time.
Yep.
You thought that's what the password was? I was going to make it the password. Nope, that was already the password. Then why didn't you let me log in first?
Right. Well, and what we find is that sometimes people fumble finger passwords or they fumble finger the shift key.
And that's why they make you type it twice, because it's unlikely you'll type it wrong the same way twice. But I've done that.
So have I.
Yeah. And the guy 50-odd years ago that recommended obscuring the passwords as you typed it has apologized to the internet officially. That when they were setting up these early recommendations, they figured the biggest threat would be someone looking over your shoulder watching you type, so hide the password. Turns out the biggest threat is you typing it wrong.
Right.
So many, many websites have a little eyeball button where you can see the password, and the ones that don't are very annoying. Yes, it is more secure not to see what you're typing.
Right.
But
and if you're a touch typist, fine.
Yeah.
You stare at the keyboard. And if you, and that's one of the reasons people make such simple passwords.
And then you go bang, 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 not accepted. I know I typed it right.
Right. But that's also why many people use such simple passwords.
Yeah.
If my password is 123, it's really unlikely I'm going to screw that up.
Yeah.
If I can't see it. So I get that. I do. But, you know, it's still a tough problem. And we're trying, you know, there's a whole bunch of the fingerprint reader that Fred was talking about is one way people try to get around that. It doesn't work everywhere. It doesn't work on every machine. It doesn't work, you know, I don't have one on this machine.
It can be temperamental.
They can be temperamental. But, you know, biometrics, your phone does that. Almost everything I go into on my phone asks for my fingerprint now. So that, you know, I don't have to remember passwords. B, if you're going to steal my phone, take my thumb or whichever finger I happen to be.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you got two of them, so.
Right. Which thumb, which fingers?
Yeah.
I do not use the.
Now, it would only be a problem if you get into your toes.
Right.
I ain't going there, folks.
Right. In the summer, it's easier, but in the winter, you've got to take off the shoe and
please.
The sock.
Yeah. With your big toe.
But yeah, so, you know, it's a tough thing right now. And, you know, none of this was ever designed originally for that's why there's multi-factor authentication. That's why people use the keys, what do they call them?
Security dongle, key fob.
Key fob things.
YubiKey.
YubiKeys and all of those. Yeah. So, that's the idea behind those. They should be more secure than just typing in a simple password. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, sound bites. member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Anita, all the way from Los Angeles, California, on the line. Hello, Anita. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are y'all doing?
We're doing peachy. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Now, before you ask your question, I hate to ask this, but how's the weather out there?
It's cloudy.
Okay, you can speak now.
But wait a minute. No, what's the temperature?
Oh, it's like maybe in the 60s, high 60s.
Okay.
Oh, not bad. Okay,
we're
you can
warmer.
Talk to us.
We're warmer.
Yeah, we'll talk to you.
Thank you.
You passed the test.
Yep, what's up?
Appreciate you. Are any of you guys familiar with the Samsung A9 Plus tablet?
Yeah, it's an Android tablet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. What's up with it?
I just bought one, and I have it set up the way I want to, but my issue is I can't upload pictures from my flash drive to the tablet. Is there any way to do that?
From what drive?
Flash drive?
The flash drive.
Oh, yeah.
I know there's a new device out that will work on, like, phones and that type of stuff that's got the adapter that you can put in, like, the charging unit and hook up, like, flash drives and all this other stuff to transfer stuff.
One of the problems is that not all tablets provide enough power. So normally you just plug the flash drive into the tablet, so you'd need a USB card reader.
Right.
If you can find a USB card reader that has its own power power cord, then that supplies enough power, and the tablet should be able to read it.
Let's back up for a second. My question to you would be, why do you need the pictures on your tablet?
So I can use them as wallpapers.
Okay. Yeah, you could. But what I would suggest, because too often, you know, people have hundreds of photos.
And you fill your tablet.
Yeah, and you'd fill your tablet up before, you know, you even got any applications on it. Whereas if you were to, say, store them up on the cloud in Google Photo and just pull down a couple at a time that you want to use for a wallpaper, you know, maybe three or four, and have it switch. And then when you're done with those, delete it from the tablet, but then go up to the cloud and re-download any other, say, this month I want my one kid, group of grandkids on it. And then the following month, you know, I take those off and I want my other child's grandkids on it. You know, and you're switching between the two.
All right. So are you using, okay. So, yes, the easiest way to do this is to. What did you do?
I don't know why that thing is.
Okay.
That was Dave.
Sorry, Anita. That was Dave. So one of the things that's easiest to do is to throw your pictures into the cloud and then download them to your phone. The question is, what's the easiest way to do that? And when you have a Samsung phone or tablet in this case, you have two choices of systems to use. You can use the Google system, Gmail, Google Photos, Google Contacts, or you could be using the Samsung software, Samsung Contacts, Samsung Photos, etc. So the first thing to know is which of those you do. The second thing, the second thing is then to use the same software on your computer. So there is a Samsung Gallery app. There is the Google Photos app. So let's say you were using Samsung Gallery. Let's say you're using the Samsung apps. You put the in Microsoft apps, you would load Samsung Gallery onto your you have a Windows machine?
Oh, I don't have a computer.
You only had the tablet?
Ah. Okay, then one of the things you can try is to buy what's called a USB-C to USB-A adapter.
Or a USB, USB-C flashcard reader.
Well, yeah. the idea is if you have a C to A adapter, you can plug the flash drive.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, okay.
Oh, I have one of those.
Okay. So the theory is you should be able to plug that into your phone, and it would then see those photos as you would go into the file app, and you would then see that flash drive as another drive, open it up, pick the pictures, copy them to your phone, and be done. Have you tried that?
No, I haven't yet.
Yeah, that's the first thing to try.
And sometimes the tablet doesn't provide enough power to read the flash drive, which is why you need a powered flash drive reader.
Right. But theoretically,
just plug it in and see is the easiest step.
Right. Theoretically, it should provide enough power to do that. So make sure your tablet is well charged, of course.
Right.
But then just plug the flash drive into the tablet, go into the file app, and see if you can see that flash drive as another drive. Then you should be able to open it and grab the photos and, you know, long click on them and say copy, and then, you know, paste them on into the space you want in your phone, in your tablet itself.
And you only need to copy the few that you want, so you don't have to copy everything and fill up your tablet storage.
Right.
Okay. Let me ask you this then. See, I have an iPad. That's where I got the pictures from to put on the flash drive. And I have one of those little dingly dongly things that you plug it in to the iPad and you put your SD card or your flash drive in there.
Yeah.
Can I do it that kind of way?
If it's the same connector, the older iPads used a different connector called Lightning, and the newer the newer ones use USB-C. So it depends.
Yeah, I had the Lightning, and I had the little dongle with the Lightning connector thingy on it.
Yeah, that only works on Apple devices and older ones. The newer devices went to USB-C like everybody else.
Right. And just like you have a dongle with Lightning on one end and the connector for the flash drive in the other, you can get a dongle that has USB-C on one end and the connector for the flash drive on the other, and do essentially the same thing you just did. With the iPad, you can do it in the other direction.
With a different device.
With the tablet, with the Samsung tablet. So Steve, I think, is looking for a...
I posted a link from Samsung on the ways to import. Any generic USB-C to USB-A. I'm looking the specs on the A9 to see if it is a C or an A.
It's a C.
It's a C. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So it would be USB-C male to probably USB-A female.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If your flash drive is a USB-A flash drive.
Is it USB?
Flash drive is a C.
Is also a C, so you should just be able to plug it in.
Plug it straight into the Samsung.
Yeah, but it won't transfer to the tablet.
Well, it doesn't do it automatically because now it doesn't know how to do that. So what you have to do is once it's plugged in, you go into the file app on your tablet. And you should be able to see on the left-hand side the flash drive. Tap on that, maybe double tap to open it up. And you should be able to see your photos, and then you should be able to long tap, hold, you know, tap and hold, and you'll get a menu that says copy, and you can copy it and then go into the folder you want it in and say paste.
Now, if like on the iPad, if you go into the Photos app, it sees the flash drive as a camera and just imports the photos like it was a camera.
It might do that.
Samsung might do that in the Photos app on the Samsung too.
Right. I think they call it gallery, but gallery or photos.
Samsung gallery, yeah. It may see it as a camera to import them as pictures. And if it doesn't see it, it may be that there's not enough power on that USB port.
Right, but that's the place to start.
Okay. I'll try that.
All right, good luck. Let us know.
Thank you. I will.
Stay in touch. And, of course, your job now is to get everybody in Los Angeles to listen to the show.
A couple of my friends do listen to you guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Anita. Have fun. Bye-bye. It's 9 o'clock in the morning for her, 9:44. Yeah. So, yeah.
3 hours?
No, 4 hours.
I thought it was three.
Oh, no, you're right. It's 3 hours difference.
So theoretically, the other thing she could do is email a photo or two at a time from her iPad to her Samsung.
That's true. That's very true. If she's got an iPad, if it's her, it doesn't matter whose iPad it is. They can, whoever
they can
owns
email,
the
yeah.
iPad
yeah.
can email the photos to her. She would get them in the email app on her tablet, and then she could save them from there. Yep. So, Anita, and I know you're still listening. So that's another thing to try. Have whoever gave you those photos email them to you and use the email app on your phone, on your tablet, to save them to your tablet.
Generally, you can only fit two or three photos in an email.
But one is better.
Yep.
But the thing of it is, though, is, and it's also going to take up quite a bit of space on that tablet.
That's why you know,
she's not going to have 1,000 of them, but she's going to have one or two or three or
yeah.
four.
That
shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, no, it's some backgrounds. Right. I can see that. But if people are going to, you know, load it up with folders and all of a sudden want to load other software and they want,
That's why you use Google Photos or iCloud Photos to offload. I have 80,000 photos on my iPad.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. They're on my cloud, and I can look at them if I need to.
Right, and I do the same with my phone. Yep. The other thing is that whoever created those photos, if they have iCloud or Google Drive or whatever, they can share the folder.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then
she can then see on
you're good
her.
To go.
Right, which then she can then see on her tablet and download the photos from there. So there are more choices you have than you think, Anita.
Just got to explore them and try them out. And
check with whoever owns that tablet. Or if it's you, you can do it yourself. You can move them to the cloud. You can email them to yourself. If you move them to the cloud, you can share them with yourself, or with other people, whatever. But that's the way to do it. And you don't have to have an iPad to share an iCloud
iCloud Photos, yeah.
iCloud Photos.
You can use the iCloud website on a non-Apple device.
Exactly.
So you don't have to have an Apple device
Right. So whoever owns that iPad can save them to iCloud, share that with you through your email address. You can then see them on your tablet and download them from there. That may, in fact, be the easiest way. You know, the days of SneakerNet are limited at best these days. So yeah, that's something to try. I still use thumb drives for installing Linux on laptops. But other than that, I gave a talk the other night to a sorority, and I brought the
flash presentation
on a flash drive just in case, and in fact yes, it was necessary, so great. But that's how it works, you know. Well, that's what you do nowadays,
and that's the thing nowadays too, though people don't realize it, that when you order a computer, oh guess what, a lot of them don't have CD-ROM drives anymore. All going to flash drives. If you want a CD-ROM drive in your unit, you've got to order it special.
And
the same with laptops.
If you're going to buy a flash drive, get the one with both USB-A and USB-C on it, because you don't know what you're going to come up against anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't have A anymore.
No, but I have 3A adapters.
Right, but is the other person going to have them?
Because I bought a new camera. I haven't been able to find a camera that had C, although I haven't looked in a while.
Is it Australian? Eh?
Eh? Yes, Canadian.
Canadian. But yeah, so they do make thumb drives with both A and C connectors. And really, you know, I've got one that's A only, and I worried about that when I went to give my talk. Mm. I got there and I thought, what if all they have is a Mac?
Oh,
I'm I'm done. I can't move my...
We had this discussion with a customer the other day, and their thought, and I kind of agree with them, the venue should have all those adapters too.
And there's no question of that, but
but that's something that's coming up now that's relatively new.
Is it VGA or is it HDMI?
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of them aren't aware that they need to have those devices handy because of the technology changing so fast.
Right. Hmm. So if you're gonna buy some thumb drives, get the one I've got. My Samsung. It's Samsung. Yeah, I think so. Holy crap. Is a little slider. One end comes out USB A. Slide it the other way. The other end comes out USB C.
AC/DC.
It's AC/DC.
It's a 256 gig drive. It has 103,000 reviews. At 4.5 stars.
Yeah.
That's probably, it's, well, SanDisk, that's a good brand. Actually, and
that's what it was, SanDisk.
Yeah. Be very, very wary of flash drives that are too cheap.
Yeah.
You know, if it says a terabyte for $20, you know, that's too cheap. There's a big issue with fake flash drives on Amazon and eBay and other, you know, big resellers that they don't make themselves. It's, you know, they have third-party sellers on their platform, and so you buy something that seems to be too cheap, and it's fake. In fact, we've had stories where people open it up, and inside there's like a 4 meg card, just so it looks like it's working. And somebody went to the trouble of making firmware that tells your computer this is a terabyte drive, and accepts you writing data to it.
Right. And how big is it?
4 meg. And then when you go to read something back, it says error because there's nothing there to read. But it writes the data with no errors.
Yeah.
So they took all that time and effort to make these fake flash drives. Use your powers for good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but probably, you know, the little time that they had to do, you know, spend to do that versus the money that they're making off of the scam.
Now, right now, I sell a million of these and... I've
recouped my investment.
Yep.
And then some.
Yep.
And then most folks are going to sit there, oh, it's not worth the hassle for the little bit that I paid for it. You know, it's not big money. You know, even if it's, you know, $10-15 and you get, you know, a couple million people ordering them, you know, and most of them are going to sit there and not be bothered because it costs so much just to return it. Sometimes it costs more to return it than it did to ship it to you.
If you are going to shop at Amazon, you need to know about ReviewMeta.com. And it's a website where you go to it and you type in the product page URL from Amazon. And it analyzes all the reviews and tells you which ones are fake.
Oh.
And then it rejiggers everything to give you an honest answer. So it's like 5 stars with 1,000 reviews.
Yep.
58% of them are fake. If you get rid of those, it's a 3.8-star review.
Mm.
And that's what this site does. It's called ReviewMeta.com, and Steve's going to post that.
Got to try that one out.
Yeah.
Definitely, because, you know, like you say.
I've only used it a couple of times. It seems to be legit. Seems to be accurate.
But hey, at least it's another opinion,
right?
Than just you relying on what you're seeing on the screen. Oh, yeah, they've got 4.5 stars out of 5. You know, and
you look at the reviews, and they all say exactly the same thing. No, I think not.
Yeah,
I think not.
Smell fish,
right?
The one that I like is Camel. It you leave something in your Amazon cart. And it will watch the price drop. So if you don't need it right now, but you know, and then it gets annoying when you see the price go up.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Yeah, just before a holiday, all the prices go up so they can go on sale back to the price they originally were.
Right. But yeah, so take a look at Review Meta and stick it in your bookmarks and check when you're buying something from Amazon that you don't. I mean, look, if you're going there to get Q-tips, you're pretty much going to get Q-tips. So you don't have to use this. But if you're looking at something new, use the review.
They need to create that like an extension onto like Chrome.
There may well be one.
That would be so cool that you could sit there and click on the extension, you know, just like GrammarCheck and all this other stuff that could pop up and quick check it for you.
How about Amazon do it themselves?
They don't know.
No, the million.
No.
In fact, with the fake flash drives, people have tried to report them as fake. Yep. And Amazon investigates, takes the review down, and say, you know, our investigation has shown that they're not fake.
Right.
But they're not the capacity that, okay, they're not a fake flash drive.
Right.
They're not the capacity they claim to be.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, again, it's all in the wording.
Yep.
You say, you know, apples and it's really oranges, but yet it's still a fruit. You know,
right. I read a story where someone complained that they were given a green apple because red apples are for eating. Green apples are for pies. I can eat green apples, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Granny Smith. They said it was an old lady who probably was a granny. Yeah.
Yeah. They're quite tart.
The Granny Smith make really good pies. But yeah, you can eat green apple if they're supposed to be green. If they're supposed to be red, wait till they're red.
Well, yes. Yes. Don't eat green apples if it's not a green apple.
Yeah.
But yeah, so check out Review Meta. Next time you go to buy something on Amazon that you're not sure what it is, you know, there are a couple things I order fairly regularly from Amazon. I know what they are. I've used them before. I don't need this.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go to look at something new, I always check the reviews. And now I can check the reviews that are at least considerably more legit. And there, let's bring it all back around. Call back to the beginning of the show. It's kind of an AI thing where the background program is saying, this doesn't pass the smell test. It's important these days to be as careful as you can about so many things. And among them is Amazon reviews. That's just the way that goes. So ReviewMeta.com. Steve's already put it on there.
And that's because companies will buy reviews.
Yep.
They'll pay somebody a penny a piece or a dollar a piece to write fake reviews.
Yeah.
Claiming our product is good. And they'll also pay for fake reviews claiming their competitor's product is bad.
Right.
So you can't trust the good ones or the bad ones.
Right, exactly. In fact,
general rule of thumb, throw away all the zeros, throw away all the fives, and just look at the two, three, and four.
Right. Exactly right. You're not lying. And also when you look at these things, you also have to pay attention to what's actually going on. So there was a product that I wanted and it had a whole lot of bad reviews. And it turns out that A, people were using it for something it wasn't intended for.
Mm.
B, they didn't understand how to use it properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, you buy a pair of scissors and you're upset that they won't cut down a tree. Okay.
Well, it'll just take a while.
Yeah. Okay. I bought the product, knew how to use it and what it was intended for, and it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, three and four reviews told me that. So, you know, I bought it to cut down a tree and it's
not working right.
Not working right. Well, okay. That's
why it happened.
I get that. That's right. You can take down a tree with a paper cut too, if you give it enough of them.
Yeah.
But you know, so it's that kind of thing. You got to be aware of what it is that they're saying and why, not just what, but why. One of the reviews was right in the description. It says not suitable for X.
Mm-hmm.
Half the reviews were I can't use it for X.
Yes. That's right.
That's exactly right. That should therefore be a 5-star review.
Yep.
Because it exactly doesn't do what it says it doesn't do. All right. That music tells us the show is done for another week. I want to thank everyone who... Oh, my. I'm
that was
echoing.
Interesting.
I want to thank everyone who called in. Good discussions this week. Thank you very much. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We're done. He's doing the things on YouTube now. And, you know, Steve does. He gets YouTube and Facebook and all kinds of places with the video. So nicely done, Steve. Unfortunately, we see his face everywhere, too, so that's a problem. But we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?